Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right here on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. Your home for first place Sporting Kansas City. 13 points out of six games. A 4-1-1 record. Five matches unbeaten on the trot for Sporting Kansas City as they come off a 2-0 victory over the star-studded Zlatan Ibrahimovic-led LA Galaxy over this past weekend. And at 13 points, Sporting KC level with NYCFC atop the Supporters Shield standings. Although I will point out NYCFC with the game in hand when it comes to that race. But what a show we have for you today here on the SKC Show. Myself, Nate Bucati, along with El Jefe Carter Augustine. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, you got me right at the wrong moment there. I'm doing well now. What a game this weekend.
What a game it was. You and I were on the call on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Certainly, we will talk about that. We will talk with Taylor Twellman from ESPN. He is going to be on the call of this weekend's game against Seattle Sounders at 3 o'clock on Sunday at Children's Mercy Park. We expect a fantastic crowd for that game as the Sounders are looking for their first win, first result, first goal of the season. They've only played three games, but they're 0-3, and they have not gotten on the score sheet as of yet. We'll talk about all of that plus more with Taylor Twellman. We will also talk with Sporting Kansas City player Brad Evans, who has spent the balance of his career with Seattle, won a trophy there, and is now with Sporting KC. So we're going to chat with him a little bit about seeing his former club on Sunday. And we're going to talk about this terrific performance by Sporting KC against the LA Galaxy. I'll put this question to you that I was asked by somebody earlier today, Carter. The question was, do we give Sporting KC credit for a thorough 2-0 dominant performance at LA, or do we take points away because there were three posts hit and 10 saves by the goalkeeper? I'll leave you to answer that question before I give you my two cents.
Yeah, you know, I give Sporting Kansas City full credit. And, you know, a lot of the media has been pointing to the 10 saves from Tim Melia. It's a club record for, it ties a club record in any game with the legendary Tony Meola MLS Cup game. And it's a club record for a regular season game, 10 saves for Tim Melia.
Earned him Player of the Week honors in MLS as well, not just goalkeeper,
the Player of the Week. Yep. I'm certain it was a high score on the Audi Player Index.
I'll take a look at that for you.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Somehow I don't have that number off the top of my head. But what I would say is I would actually echo Tim Melia's comments after the game, where he's normally very deflective of praise. And that's just something that he is. He's a humble guy. I think something that's admirable about him. So this is not out of the character for him. He was deflecting all praise towards him, saying, you know, it was a team effort. The guys shifted well. They really blocked a lot of shots. It was a great defensive effort all the way around. And that's what I would point to, because when you look at the shot chart of the saves that he made, the one save on Ashley Cole is amazing. It's a fantastic save. But for the most part, Sporting limited LA Galaxy to shots from outside the box. And Tim Melia's positioning was amazing. You would say the should have been goal from Skielnik, Skielvik. He should have scored that. And for me, I think you give full credit to Sporting Kansas City, because the game plan was to, you heard Peter Vermees say it, they wanted to stop as many crosses as possible. Really just the one to Pontius that went off the post. Mm-hmm. And then you had Zlatan posted up on Jimmy Madronda at some point in the second half. That wasn't the best matchup for Sporting Kansas City, but didn't come away with anything. So I think their game plan worked. LA Galaxy, 22 shots, just 10 on target for the 10 saves, and most of them came from outside the area. So I think, not to take credit away from a 10-save performance from Tim Melia, his positioning was fantastic. Didn't really spill any rebounds. He had a great game. He did. But overall, I thought the team played really well defensively, and add in the 2-goal lead. So they sagged for the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes, and that invited some shots in as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I would echo all those comments. For the record, Tim Melia was the player of the game, according to the Audi Player Index, posting a robust score of 1,119.
Wow.
For a breakdown on that, Carter Augustine will do a separate podcast later this week. Tim Melia, though, he did the job. He needed to make saves. Yeah. He made the saves. He was in the right position. But as you said, I think all of those, even by his own self-deprecating standard, I think they honestly were relatively comfortable saves. But I'll go back to what Matt Beisler told us a year ago. His words for Tim Melia on a consistent basis have been, we need you to make one big save for us every game.
Mm-hmm.
If we do our jobs, you know, you shouldn't have to do much more than that, but one big save. We saw him do it last year, obviously, time after time. And again, this game, you mentioned it. He made the one big save at the end of the first half on Ashley Cole. That was a terrific save.
0-0 at the time.
Yeah, and that changes the game if he doesn't make that save. So Tim Melia certainly deserved of praise in this game. But I do think that if you want to say, well, the Galaxy, you know, were unlucky because they had 10 shots on goal and didn't break through. Well, they put most of the shots were difficult shots, first of all. And the ones that were close, they either put off the post or they put right at the keeper. It was down to a lack of clinical finishing on their part in that regard. And I also echo your comments that Sporting did the job to build a 2-0 lead. They protected that lead down the stretch. Maybe, like you could say, the opposite of what we saw against NYCFC when Sporting Kansas City were chasing two goals at home. They certainly started throwing numbers forward and creating chances down the stretch, but they weren't able to break through. And I don't think many people were saying, well, NYCFC were lucky to come away from that game. So certainly a fantastic result for Sporting Kansas City. And two road wins already this season compared to the road struggles from a year ago. And not only two road wins, but now three road games in which they have shown they can score multiple goals, which was something we hardly saw at all last year.
Yeah, they've scored multiple goals in all the road games, undefeated on the road so far. What a start for SKC. And, you know, I look at just one more point on Tim Melia. This is how XG, expected goals, can, it's like any stat, it can fit your narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this actually helps Sporting's case, is that, LA Galaxy had almost two expected goals, I think, just under, mm-hmm. and Sporting had just under one expected goals. But you look at the expected goals shot chart, and the one from Ashley Cole is hardly an expected goal. Tim Melia is not going to get much credit for making that save as far as XG goes. Meanwhile, Skjelvik's XG is like a full, it's pretty much one. He's on the six, unmarked. The ball falls to him. Tim Melia does not move. The ball gets kicked straight to him, and he catches it. Mm-hmm. And that is going to go down at the end of the season as almost a full goal saved for Tim Melia. So it's just kind of interesting when you look at just numbers. Kevin Durant went on a big rant about this. You have to watch the games. You can't just look at just the numbers. And I feel like the 10 saves, a lot of people are looking at it as, oh, man, LA Galaxy should have maybe gotten something out of this game. But when you look at what actually happened there, Sporting's game plan worked really, really well. And they get the two-goal lead, and they can sag back.
And one of the prettiest goals of the year,
courtesy of
Johnny Russell, the birthday boy, at 28 years old. He scored fairly well on the Audi Player Index as well. In case you're wondering, he was tremendous. And the bottom line is, it doesn't really matter what anybody says. The score is all that matters, and it was 2-0 in favor of Sporting Kansas City. Now they come home, I think, expecting to grab 3 points against a really struggling Seattle Sounders team. But we know every team in MLS must be taken seriously, and we will do that. We'll talk about this Seattle team and preview the matchup with Taylor Twellman coming up next on the Sporting Kansas City Show. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And we've got back-to-back national television games for Sporting Kansas City, as this Sunday afternoon they will be taking on the two-time Western Conference champion Seattle Sounders at 3 o'clock. And it's on ESPN. Of course, you can also listen to it live right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB with myself and Carter Augustine on the call. But the one and only Taylor Twellman will be on the call on television as well, and he joins us now. Good afternoon, Taylor. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing great. And right now, Sporting Kansas City are doing great. Flying high. They're tied atop the Supporter Shield standings right now. They're in first place in the Western Conference. So I guess we'll start right there. How impressed have you been, or what has impressed you about Sporting Kansas City through the first six games of this season?
I'm not shocked. You look at any team that's been, especially Sporting Kansas City, over the last couple of years under Peter Vermes, they're always prepared. They're always, you know, well-oiled in what they want to do and well-drilled, so to speak. So they know what they're doing, right? And they have an idea of what they want to do. I think what's impressed me more about this year is that coming into the year, we all knew, and you guys knew this as well, that they needed to be more dynamic going forward. They have struggled to get things going in the final third of the field, and they've struggled to impose their will on other teams. They've won games traditionally with their defensive shape and being very stout that way. What's impressed me this year is that the first couple games this year, they struggled doing that, but they're scoring goals. I do think, though, the performance in L.A. last weekend is the kind of performance you're going to see this year. Johnny Russell scoring a great goal, Tim Melia making 10 saves, leaving StubHub Center in a shutout. That tells me Sporting Kansas City is starting to figure it out pretty quickly here.
Yeah, Taylor, there's, as you said, they're looking for dynamism in attack this season. And I think a big reason for that has been a couple of the new guys have come in and hit the ground running. What have you made of Johnny Russell and Felipe Gutierrez and how they've started this season so quickly for Sporting?
Well, Sporting Kansas City needed it, right, my man? So no matter what, you knew the pressure on new signings is always going to be there. Anytime you're a new signing coming in, you expect something to happen. And as a player, as an ex-player, when you're in that role, you want something to happen pretty quickly. Well, let's make no mistake about it. Felipe Gutierrez, what is it, 5 games played, 5 goals. Mm-hmm. You look at Johnny Russell, he's got 2 goals, 2 assists in his time. So they're putting up the numbers, but it's also the eye test, whether or not those numbers are there or not. They're dynamic enough and a threat enough that the opposition now isn't throwing numbers forward the way they did in 2017 and even 16 because they knew Sporting Kansas City wasn't that much of a threat going the other way. I look at Kyrie Shelton's another player. You know, they're unbeaten since he's been in that, right? So you look at that, and Kyrie Shelton's come in, and he's played 5 games, and guess what? Sporting Kansas City hasn't lost, so he's added a different dynamic. I just look at those three players. There's a different element to Sporting Kansas City, rightfully so, and if you look at Felipe Gutierrez in particular, 3 game-winning goals, he's put his name in that conversation early on for newcomer of the year.
That's a great shout on Kyrie Shelton as well, Taylor, and I'm curious from you, having been a forward that scored so many goals, Shelton yet to get off the mark in that respect for Sporting Kansas City, but he leads the line in this 4-3-3. He's the lone forward up there. And what type of, you know, what's the pressure for that forward in this system for Peter Vermes?
For Peter Vermes in that system, that guy's got to be someone that can play in behind the back four of the opposition and someone that's got to have pace to stretch a line. When you have guys like Gutierrez and Russell and whoever else is underneath, obviously that's an interchanging position right now for Peter Vermes. When you look at that, you've got to have someone that opens up that space. And one way to do that is having the pace and the speed to get in behind. I'm not sure Kyrie Shelton's ever going to score 10, 15 goals, but right now from what we've seen, he is a guy that's going to open up the field for the other players, and those are the players that you've spent big money to bring in. Kyrie Shelton has done his job so far.
We're visiting with Taylor Twellman. He'll be on the call as Sporting Kansas City take on Seattle on Sunday at 3 o'clock. And, you know, talking about this increased dynamism going forward for Sporting, Taylor, I find it interesting. You just were on the call, I believe, of the LAFC versus Atlanta game this past weekend. And now you're going to be on the call. Well, you weren't on the call, but it was on ESPN. And now you're going to be on the call of the Orlando City game against Philadelphia. Those two teams feature in Orlando and LAFC players that were beloved figures here in Kansas City that Peter Vermes was willing to trade away in order to acquire money to bring in guys like Felipe Gutierrez and Johnny Russell. And I'm just curious, you watch the way all these different managers and general managers in MLS have to try to remain competitive year after year. Your thoughts on the job, because it was highly controversial when Peter Vermes made those moves last year. Does it look to you like it's now paying off what he did last year in terms of this year?
It's interesting. I called Orlando City and Portland this past weekend, and when you look at a player like Dom Dwyer and the amount of money that Orlando City paid for him, I don't know if necessarily anyone questioned the move. I think the bigger question is, well, what do you use the money for? Mm-hmm. So there's two ways to look at it. No one looked at that money and said, well, wait a minute. I don't know if I would have ever done that trade. There's not a single person in Major League Soccer that told me they wouldn't have done that trade.
Right.
So that's not a knock on Dom Dwyer at all. But the reality is that just tells you what the ransom was that they were willing to pay in Orlando City. So Peter Vermes had to make that trade. The question is, what do you do with that money? As we've seen with the New York Red Bulls, it's been highly controversial a little bit that they have not brought in a Thierry Henry or a Tim Cahill after getting rid of those guys and selling the Matt Miazgas of the world, where they've brought in a lot of money. Then they trade Felipe, they trade Sasha Kljestan, and yet there's you know what I'm saying? There's
sure.
two kinds of conversations. Sure. I don't think it was controversial at all to get rid of Dom Dwyer. Now looking at the Johnny Russell, Felipe Gutierrez. Now, Crozet is a player that I still think the jury's out. I'm not completely sold on him as a designated player, and it's going to be interesting to see if he can actually be that creative player, so to speak. But the reality is Johnny Russell and Felipe Gutierrez have already answered the question, I think. Now, if they don't score for the next 20 games, you and I are going to be talking at the end of the year saying it was a flop. But the amount of money given for Dom Dwyer, unequivocally, you have to get rid of. Benny Failhaber, all of us in the game close to it knew his time was up. The moment the expansion team came in, you knew he's the kind of player through traditionally Major League Soccer, and being an L.A. guy, you saw that happening. So I thought both moves were the right moves by the front office. And so far, Johnny Russell and Gutierrez have proven that Peter Vermes knows what he's doing when he's given some money.
All right, let's talk about the other side of this matchup. And it's a Seattle team that is still looking for their first goal on the year. They're still looking for their first point on the year. Of course, I'll always point out that a couple years ago, they were in last place going into the summer and ended up winning the entire thing. So we won't jump to conclusions, but I know they've also had a major injury, obviously, to Jordan Morris. Has it surprised you the slow start they've gotten off to?
Oh, man, that's a tough one for me. The opening game of the year, again, for us in the season, was the LAFC MLS debut in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I was asked that question on our pregame show, and I'm going to still give the same answer because they've only played, what, three games or four games or whatnot.
Three games,
so
you
look at three games in, I said this, it's going to go one way or the other. Because when you look at an aging team, Clint Dempsey, Ozzy Alonso, Chad Marshall, you look at those kinds of players, it's going to go to the way where they win the Western Conference and make it to the MLS Cup for the third final year, and that's their swan song, or this thing's going to fall flat on their face. Now, I'm not going to say it's fallen flat on their face yet because of the previous 2 years they've had slow starts, but the injury to Jordan Morris has killed this team because he is the only player that offers them any kind of pace to play in behind the back four. Will Bruin, Rodriguez, Dempsey, Ladero, they're all limited if you don't have any space. And so without Jordan Morris and that injury, Will Bruin, who's your prototypical center forward, decent with his back to goal, he's going to score you 8, 9, 10 goals a year, but he's very predictable. And that's the problem with the Seattle Sounders team, is that they are very predictable going forward. They're very easy to manage. Everything's being played in front of the back four. And in a World Cup year for Nicolas Ladero, Roman Torres, there's also, in the back of your mind, well, what am I doing enough? They may be pressing. I'm not shocked to the slow start, but if it continues, I have a bad feeling this may fall flat on his face. And if it does, what decisions do they make? Do they go after a designated player like a Fernando Torres this summer, or do they wait it out and make those decisions at the end of the year? I think we're going to see an interesting 6-7 weeks here before the summer break for Seattle Sounders.
And do you think that their scheduling, with them being in the CCL and having only played the three games so far with 0 points, now they're already looking at 10 points Vancouver ahead of them, 13 points Sporting KC. Is this slow start to the schedule, is that going to hurt them now with how many moves were made in the Western Conference in the offseason?
Yeah, I chuckle at the MLS schedule because, I mean, how do I critique something where Sporting Kansas City's played double the amount of games as Seattle?
Yeah.
I mean, what do I do with that? I mean, Seattle's played six, and Seattle's played three, and Sporting Kansas City, Vancouver played six, guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. It's virtually impossible to read anything at the beginning of the year because of the unbalanced schedule in Major League Soccer. Toronto, because of CONCACAF Champions League, has played three games, like Seattle. But then you look at what Columbus Crew have played six. So everybody goes, Columbus has 10 points. It's amazing. Oh, yeah, but they've played six games.
Mm-hmm.
So I always look at that schedule, those standings, and this year will be and I'm not beating around the bush or dodging the question. The reality is, with an uneven schedule this year, with 12 teams in the West and 11 in the East, it's going to be very hard to make any kind of predictions or see any trends because the schedule is going to be so imbalanced.
Yeah, and the World Cup, like you mentioned, in the summer as well.
Yeah, I mean, LAFC has decided to play a lot of their games during the World Cup. You know, those home games. You know, how many teams are going to make those decisions? Those are all interesting. And if they lose, you know, Carlos Vela, and all of a sudden Mexico goes to what? The quarterfinals by some chance, or Belgium does, and Laurent Simon, then you're putting a real some real pressure on the depth of your team. But reading the standings right now, I'm better off blindfolding myself and throwing a dart at the board and then just picking one of the teams.
Yeah, it's certainly far too early to draw any big conclusions. One constant I've heard from almost everybody we've talked to so far, and we certainly thought this when we saw them in week one, is that NYCFC is the real deal. Do you look at them as, I don't know, do you think they're the best team in the league or one of the best teams in the league? How do you see them?
I expected a third year under Patrick Vieira, second offseason, where he can build that roster. I fully expected them to be at the top of the Eastern Conference, let alone Major League Soccer. So that's not a surprise to me at all. But Atlanta United's not even fully healthy.
Yeah.
And you watch what that team is about. You look at, you know, Brad Friedel's done a good job. 5 games played, they've got 10 points. New England, Columbus, I don't know what Greg Berhalter does to his team, but, you know, he's got a bunch of guys that, you know, very few teams would say are going to have successful seasons, and yet look at what he's doing with Giazzi Zardes. So expect the unexpected when trying to analyze Major League Soccer. And that's why when you started the show, Nate, you asked me, what do you think about Sporting Kansas City? If you would have told me at the beginning of the year, I would have said, no, Peter Vermes is going to have them. He's going to have them ready, and he's going to have them prepared. It's just whether or not they're going to have the ability to score goals. So far, they've shown that with, 12 goals in 6 games.
One other thing I wanted to ask you about, Taylor, before we let you go. Tonight, we've got 2 of those CONCACAF Champions League games again, the second legs of the Red Bulls versus Chivas and Club America versus Toronto. How do you feel about the American prospects in these two games, and how significant in your mind is tonight when it comes to MLS?
It could be the biggest night in Major League Soccer's history. And DC United fans will laugh at that because obviously they've won the competition back in the day. But the reality is this, is that if you have New York Red Bulls against Toronto for the CONCACAF Champions League final, it reaffirms to the MLS ownership groups that if you spend money and if you do it wisely, you will have a real significant say into the region. And that's the most important thing. I could care less what Don Garber and what the ownership wants to ownership groups want to tell me about becoming a top league in the world. You have to become the top league, the destination league for South American players in order to get to Europe, and you have to win CONCACAF Champions League. So New York, they've got a great opportunity. They're only down 1-0. Chivas Guadalajara had an absolute nightmare traveling to New York. The players are upset with the ownership group about not getting paid. They are perfect for the taking in New York, and I think Red Bulls have a real opportunity there. And when you look at Toronto, don't lay an egg now.
Right.
You've set yourself up 3-1 aggregate. You've done all the difficult things you need to do. You now need to get a result at Azteca. I actually expect New York Red Bulls to play Toronto for the CONCACAF Champions League final.
Wouldn't that be something? That would be certainly tremendous. Well, Taylor, we certainly appreciate the time. We look forward to seeing you here in Kansas City, and it should be a lot of fun on Sunday as Sporting KC take on Seattle. And I know you're on the call of that game on Friday night as well. So safe travels, and we'll see you here on Sunday.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, that is Taylor Twellman, best in the business when it comes to analyzing MLS on ESPN. And, of course, that game will be at 3 o'clock on Sunday. You can listen to it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You can buy tickets at sportingkc.com. You can watch the team that is tied atop the Supporter Shield standings along with NYCFC. Of course, that one game is already in progress. Red Bulls and Chivas Guadalajara tonight. It started at 7 o'clock. If you want to check it out, the Go90 app is the place to be, or Univision Deportes. And then at 9 o'clock tonight, Club America against Toronto as well. As Taylor said, maybe the most significant night in MLS history. ironically, maybe one that not as many fans are as tuned into as you would like, but you go take care of business in this. Hopefully that competition continues to raise in its profile. I think more fans are starting to take notice of it, though, Carter.
I think so, and I hope so, because it's growing in stature as well. And
it's a big deal.
The League of MX clubs are so good, and it's just they have different styles, too, that you can watch. And so it leads to a really interesting tournament, especially when you get down to these knockout stages, and it's usually League of MX teams and MLS teams. And I'm a huge fan of it, the competition. And I hope that it continues to grow. I think you're right. I think it is. Maybe not tonight. Maybe it's not getting the pub, but an all MLS final would certainly help, because that leads to an MLS club in the Club World Cup next year. Yeah. And the exposure that goes with playing against the team that wins it, the UEFA Champions League, that would be something special.
And I think that the next step for MLS, certainly, it had to prove you can compete with the Mexican clubs on a consistent basis. Then start more rivalries, you know, I mean, just a regional rivalry, you know, American teams, Canadian teams, and Mexican teams. I think the more that happens, the higher profile the league becomes. You got to get to that point before we can even aim our guns toward the big European giants, no doubt about it. But I think a lot of progress has been made, and tonight could be maybe the most defining piece of evidence to that argument going forward. All right, our thanks to Taylor Twellman for joining us. We'll be back right after this with Brad Evans, who's going to join us, former Sounders man who's now here in Kansas City to preview this match, Sporting KC and Seattle, on the Sporting Kansas City Show. Welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, as we get ready for another big Western Conference matchup on Sunday at 3 o'clock, Sporting Kansas City taking on Seattle Sounders FC. And very excited to talk to our next guest. He's a man who spent the balance of his career in Seattle. Of course, he's won trophies with Columbus Crew and with Seattle Sounders, but now he's here in Kansas City. His name's Brad Evans. Brad, good evening. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
Doing great. I guess first question is, for our fans out there, is how are you doing physically as you've been working your way back into fitness? I know you had the injury last year, and Peter Vermees told us he was going to bring you along, make sure you got back to full fitness here once you got to Kansas City. So how's that coming for you right now?
Yeah, all is going according to plan. I think the whole process is obviously a little bit longer than I'd like it to be. A herniated disc is no joke. So I've been very fortunate that the club has allowed me to take the small steps that I need to get where I belong. I've been training full the past 3 weeks. Had a good day of training today by myself, doing some extended running. So don't really want to set a timetable for myself, but I at least hope to get some minutes with Swope before I step onto the field with the first team and make sure that things are firing on all cylinders. So hopefully in the next couple weeks here.
Yeah, hopefully so, Brad. And as a result of your injury, we haven't got to see you on the field yet, and we haven't really gotten to chat with you as well. I'm curious, what brought you to Kansas City? How was that process like? And I think you've known Peter Vermees for some time as well. Is that right?
Yeah, Peter and I go back to 2005 with the under-20 national team. So we definitely go way back, and a coach that I've always admired, enjoyed my time with him on the under-20s. And, I think he's tried to get me here for a number of years. And like you guys said before, spent the majority and of my career in Seattle. I was able to captain that team and felt settled there. But the process was a tricky one. I was obviously a free agent, and Peter called me at the 11th hour and kind of said, we want to have you in preseason. And Seattle wasn't willing to give me any extended time to get my body right. And Peter said that the coaching staff and that the club was ready to give me the time that I needed to get right. So it was an obvious decision. This was a place that I wanted to be, number one. And I've always admired the club's culture here. The way they treat the players, the connection with the fans has been top class. And obviously it being a difficult place to play, this was a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, but I tell you what, there have been some terrific matchups between Sporting KC and Seattle over the years. I think obviously we'll all remember the playoff game, the wild card game, so to speak, a couple years ago that sent you guys on the MLS Cup run that Sporting Kansas City, I'm sure you've heard from the guys, felt harshly done by in that game. I'm sure you're also not apologizing for the way that one turned out either, right?
Yeah, of course not. You know, we definitely have had some phenomenal games against each other. I wouldn't classify it as a traditional rivalry, but you know, anytime you have, listen, it's two good teams. It's Seattle has been the best team over the past 9 years, record-wise, and Kansas City has been the best defensively, and obviously have hoisted a MLS Cup in that time and two Open Cups. So both teams are historically, over the past decade, probably the two top teams along with the Galaxy. So you're always going to have good games. But yeah, definitely don't you know, want to detract anything from the Sounders winning MLS Cup that year. But it was there's a couple games. Obviously, the Open Cup game that you guys beat us here, beat the Seattle Sounders here in 2013, I think. That was a heartbreaker for us. So we've been on the other side of it as well.
Yeah, that was the Eddie Johnson over the bar game. No doubt about that. We're visiting with Brad Evans, who now is with Sporting Kansas City. And I'm just curious, look, you can have a perception of a team when you're on the other side of the field. And you mentioned, you know, Sporting Kansas City's been a good organization and one you maybe had your eye on. But then it's another thing to actually get in the locker room and see it from the inside. Any surprises or what were your impressions compared to what you saw before and then what you got here?
No surprises at all. Look, I've had good relationships with Bees and with Zusi over the course of the national team careers that we've had. So I know the ins and outs of pretty much every club, and that was an easy decision for me. So, and those are two honest guys. They'll tell you who's good in the locker room, who's not good in the locker room, and they have never had anything bad to say about anybody. And so from that standpoint, the culture is what it is over the past, you know, 9-10 years. It's what has propelled this team to success. And when I got here, the locker room was as close as ever. It's a great group of guys once again. And from that standpoint, you know, you don't take anything home with you. And that's such a breath of fresh air. And at a certain point in your career, you just don't want to deal with stuff in the locker room, big egos, things like that. You just don't have time for it anymore. So to be here with a bunch of guys that put their head down, they work for a common goal, has been phenomenal.
I'm interested, Brad, having you being a longtime veteran of MLS, having started several seasons. You talk about the locker room chemistry. This was something in the off season that I was really curious about because of the amount of new players, including yourself, that have been integrated into this Sporting KC team. Down in preseason, it seemed like there was a real buzz in the locker room, and obviously, you guys are off to a fantastic start. I'm curious how are everyone settling in with this new Sporting KC team this year?
Yeah, I mean, evidence is by the results, I think. You know, you don't win as many games as we have this early in the season having a disjointed locker room. You know, and the blueprint was laid down from day one of preseason from Peter on how we wanted to play, what's expected from the players. And if you don't do those things, you're going to find yourself on another team. And that sends a direct message from the first day. And, you know, the guys in the front office, Bliss, you know, the guys making the big decisions, Peter and the assistant coaches, they don't sign players blindly. They do their homework. And so the soccer world gets very small when you've been in it long enough. And they do their homework in terms of, you know, obviously Johnny's a very good player. But beyond that, what's he like off the field? Is he a family man? Does he like to go out a lot? You know, you kind of have to do your homework to make sure that you're finding the players that fit in your culture and system, number one. And I think that across the board, the guys that they brought in all fit a certain mold, you know. And obviously, we're doing great right now, so it's easy to say that, you know. But as the season wears on, is can we stick together and, you know, keep the pressure on other teams? Can we impose our game on other teams? And can we get results? And if we don't get results, how do we right the ship quick enough that we're, you know, maybe it's one game here and there that we lose, but, you know, how quickly can this group gel together and be a successful team?
You mentioned Johnny Russell is one guy. I think the fans have quickly been alerted to just the quality of Felipe Gutierrez and Johnny Russell with the goals they've scored, with the assists they've put together, and just their overall work rate. I'm guessing that you guys, that's the type of thing, if you're a pro and you get on the training field with these guys, you see it right away. Did you feel that with these two players in particular right when you got into training with them?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I saw it immediately, and Johan as well.
Yeah.
First day of preseason, I looked around and was like, you know, Johan's going to, you know, take over this league. And there is a little bit of a learning curve, but he's slowly getting to where he wants to be. I think you saw bits and pieces of that against LA. It's going to take time. But in saying that, he's done well when he's come on. And obviously the goals and assists from the other two is proof in the pudding that they've done their homework on the league. They know what's expected of them. Scottish league is physical, aerial duels. Johnny's not the tallest guy, but he's winning almost all of his aerial battles. Gutierrez is Chilean. We know the Chileans are feisty. Diego, same thing, right? So also the fact that Felipe has only played in if you want to call it a 4-3-3, he's basically only played in that formation his whole career. So he fits in well with the way that we want to play.
Let's talk about the Seattle team a little bit. I mean, they've only played three games so far this year, and they're still looking for their first goal and their first win. I know I don't have to remind you that we've seen Seattle get off to slow starts in the past, though, and then go on and win the league. So maybe we shouldn't jump to any conclusions just yet on what we see from Seattle, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that usually is in Champions League. So oftentimes the team is chasing games played, So it's a team that you have to be aware of the dangers that they pose. I think right now it's a team that's still trying to find their identity and how exactly they want to play. You know, in the three games they've had three red cards, so you can't really figure out consistently how they're playing and what they're doing on the field. It seems like they've played behind a lot or with 10 men. So it makes it a difficult challenge. And one thing you can't do with that team is fall asleep, because they will punish you. And any time a team is on a losing streak, they're always looking at that next game, obviously, to right the ship, whether that's home, away, whatever it is. So, and we're on the opposite side of that. We're a team now that's confident, flying high. We're playing very well, keeping the ball, playing out of the back. And so we've got to be aware to not let this one slip, because you got to smell blood here. If you score one early, we can put them to bed really quickly. And that, I would love to see nothing more than that this weekend.
How big of a loss is Jordan Morris? We talked to Taylor Twellman just before you, and he said he seems to be the only guy that really brings pace to that Seattle lineup.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, the team plays a 4-2-3-1, and Jordan does provide pretty much that only pace. You know, Will's not a slow guy, but he's not, you know, Jordan's one of the fastest guys in the league.
Yeah.
So it's a big loss, and not only is he a big loss as a player, but morale-wise, you know, he's a big staple of the city, and he's kind of that focal point of the team to a certain extent. So I know that I'm sure the heads are down, his head's down, so it's a big part of that team. So we'll see how they replace him. Garth is typically a guy who changes midseason teams to try to turn them around. Nobody's a fan of that, but that's the way he does things. So we'll take advantage of the loss of Jordan right now. And if Clint is here, which I don't think he will be, that'll be another loss for them. So I think we got to smell blood in the water, and we got to put him to bed early.
You reference Clint Dempsey, and he's one of those red cards that they've had so far this year. That's happened a few times with him in his career. And I'm just curious, you mentioned being the captain for that Seattle team. Being on a team with Clint Dempsey, one of the greatest players, if not the greatest, in American history, he's also one of the biggest personalities. What was it like being being on the team with him?
So Clint obviously, you know, came over and it was a big to-do. You know, his unveiling at a halftime game. So he kind of became an instant focal point for the team. You know, they dropped $8 million on him, so of course he's going to be this big big personality that they knew, big signing, biggest American player, but for the most part, he was a quiet guy, a family guy. He's got four kids, so he spent most of his time coming to training, do his work, and then go home. Didn't really see much of him outside of practice or on road trips. So in saying that, kind of just wanted to go about his business and do his work. And that was pretty much it. He's not a From a captain standpoint, you know, as long as you're doing well and you give him the ball, then there's no problems. But if he's not getting his touches, you've seen it before. Switch can flip real quick. So, in saying that, you got to try to pick your battles. Is probably the best way to say it.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, get him the ball and just stay on his good side, I guess. That's right. Yeah, that's a smart man right there. Well, I'm curious for you, Brad, what this will be like, you know, seeing some of your former teammates. And obviously, it's not a situation where you're going to be stepping out on the field this time because, as we covered, you're coming back from the injury. So what do you anticipate Sunday being like? Will you seek out some guys, go shake hands with them? How does it go for you when you face a former team like this when you're not actually going to be playing in the game, though?
Yeah, I mean, it's easier for me. You know, the guys usually come in 2 days early from Seattle, so they'll get here Friday. Usually the team's off on their own for dinner, so hope to connect with a few guys if they get in early enough. If not, maybe see them on Saturday, stop by the hotel if they stay downtown and nice and close. But, you know, ultimately those guys are focused on the game, and there's always after the game to catch up. And, you know, I kind of let them go about their business as they see fit. You know, but if I get the invite to the hotel to come hang out and say hi to the training staff and while the guys are getting treatment on a Saturday night, that's not unheard of. So we'll see. Still up in the air a bit. But, you know, I would love nothing more than to be out on that pitch, you know, and hand them another loss. That's, you know, this one has been marked on the calendar for me and unfortunately won't make it back in time. But, yeah, it's a big one. It means a lot to me. You know, there's a lot of emotions there. So, but at the end of the day, I want to win.
Yeah, and we're looking forward to this Seattle game. And, of course, there's one more on the schedule for you to get back for, Brad. We talked about Clint Dempsey off the pitch. I'm curious about you off the pitch, Brad, just how you're settling into Kansas City and how you're taking to the city before this game, Seattle SKC.
Yeah, doing really well, settling in nice, living at the River Markets. Okay. You know, I wanted a taste of a market that I was familiar with. A great spot. You know, it's 20 minutes from here straight to training. Everything is, you know, within 15 minutes here. So it's just so easy. There's no traffic. There's not even a carpool lane here. That has blown my mind. So that's been great. Just no traffic. You know, I lived in Columbus for 2 years, so I know the Midwest. I know that lifestyle. You know, everybody's been so nice, so gracious. I have absolutely nothing bad to say. Food has been great. You know, new apartments, so meeting new neighbors and friends has been great as well. So, yeah, nothing but good things.
What's the best, maybe best food you've had, best meal you've had in Kansas City since you've been here?
So there's a little place in the River Market called The Bite, and they do like this deconstructed tamale. And I'm a huge, you know, I'm from the Southwest, so yeah. I usually try to seek out these places every mm-hmm. city that I go. And they have a pozole too, and that's like, you know, my grandparents used to make that. And so that's been it's walking distance from my place, so it's been a bit of a guilty pleasure, especially not playing many games. I got to try and you know, hit the juice bar every other day instead of getting the same meal every single day. So, but that's been really good. Been to a couple different places, but overall it's been great.
Have you been to any of the spots down on Southwest Boulevard since you're a fan of the South?
No, but I have been told about a couple different places down there that do like the Al Pastor straight off mm-hmm. on the deal that turns the meat. So I need to make my way down there on the way home from training one day or something like that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hey, let's bring it full circle as we wrap this up, Brad. You mentioned, you know, coming back from a herniated disc is no joke. What's the hardest part of the rehab been like for you? And was there a point when you realized, yeah, I'm going to be all right. I'm back and I'm going to be okay.
Well, the hardest part has been the length of the symptoms. You know, my back has never had any issues. It's always been a sciatic nerve issue. So just trying to wrap my head around how long it takes for nerves to heal has been the biggest thing, and that there's no medication you can take to heal a nerve. There's some things that you can do to help the symptoms, but in terms of actually healing, that's been the hardest part is dealing with that. So, you know, I'm still not over the hump just yet. I still have a lot to prove in doing my fitness and continuing to train in full, being honest with myself and not putting myself in a position that, you know, gets me injured and then I'm done for forever. I want to push this as long as I can and play as long as I can. So to do that, you know, it just takes a bit more time than I would like, than, you know, anybody would like. But trying to stay mentally focused has been difficult as well. But being in a new environment with new trainers, things like that, has been good for me, just to kind of focus on what I need to do.
Well, Brad, you've certainly been generous with your time. We really appreciate it, and we wish you the speediest recovery as you're getting closer and closer to being match fit. We can't wait to see you on the pitch, and I hope you get to enjoy a Sporting Kansas City win against your former club on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, me too, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad.
That is Brad Evans. You can see right there why he's a team captain. I mean, he's got it.
Yeah, he does. He's one of the best Twitter followers out there in U.S. soccer world, I would say. I actually told him the first time I met him that I followed him after... He was the last cut on the World Cup roster for Brazil, and this was after he had scored one of the best, most important goals in U.S. history in Jamaica, and one of my favorite goals. I went nuts, a 90th minute winner. But he wound up being the last cut. But the first thing he did was tweet at Ronaldo, "You're lucky that you won't have to see me on the pitch." Just hilarious. You can see he's a character in the locker room, and He's got it on the field as well. I'm anxious for him to get back to figuring in the 18 because he's versatile and he'll bring that attitude on the pitch as he does off the pitch.
I'm still angry at a guy like Julian Green being on that team over somebody like Brad Evans. That'll make me mad till the day I die. And I know Julian scored a goal.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, that will keep me angry for a long time. But we really appreciate Brad Evans joining us on the show. We'll be back to wrap things up on this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And back to wrap things up on the Sporting Kansas City Show here on your home for SKC Soccer Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's just all lay it out there for you again. Thanks for Taylor Twellman joining us on the show as Sunday's match will be televised on ESPN at 3 o'clock. And thanks to Brad Evans, the former Seattle Sounders man, now here with Sporting Kansas City, for joining us as well. 3 o'clock start time on Sunday at Children's Mercy Park. We expect a big crowd, but there are still tickets available. 888-4KC-GOAL and sportingkc.com, the website to get your tickets. And, of course, you can listen to it all right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB with the final whistle with Dave Borchert immediately following the game. Let's talk about it a little bit, Carter. Your predictions for this one. Look, we know that you can't take anything for granted in MLS. There are crazy score lines that happen every single week, unexpected score lines. But I certainly expect, with the form that Sporting Kansas City are in right now versus the form that Seattle are in right now, that SKC have to be the heavy favorites coming into this game, and you expect to grab all 3 points, and convincingly so.
Yeah, you would think so. Especially, like you said, the form that Sporting Kansas City is in, and Seattle, just they've only got the 3 games. They haven't really been able to get a proper run out on the season, it seems. And you've got back-to-back games with red cards for Seattle Sounders, which I think obviously would lead to their inability to get points from their first 3 games. And it also means they'll be without Kelvin Leerdam this upcoming Sunday.
I think that's a big loss for them,
too.
That's
a really big loss. Yeah. And so... I think Sporting, like you said, should be heavy favorites in this game. We heard from Taylor Twellman. The loss to Jordan Morris is such a big one for Seattle because right now, like he said, that team's just slow.
He's their pace.
That is a slow team. They're aging, and Ladero and Dempsey, those guys are not going to beat anyone for pace these days. And so I think Sporting will really be fancying their chances this Sunday.
Yeah, I agree. And listening to Taylor Twellman talk only further solidified that opinion for me, listening to him talk about how they don't have the pace to really stretch a back line. And I think right now, the good news for Sporting KC is that they've maintained their goal-scoring form while getting themselves sorted out defensively, seemingly, as we're looking at 5 straight halves of soccer without conceding a goal. They've got to have the confidence and swagger back defensively right now.
Yeah, they've got that swagger back on defense. And we talked about Tim Melia playing so well, but I thought several of the defenders had really excellent games. You think about Eichel Parr making that lung-busting run to shoulder Zlatan off the ball in the area. He had to run all the way from it, basically the half-field line on that in the 80-whatever minute, and showed pace, strength to knock Ibrahimovic off the ball. Beisler was fantastic as well throughout the match. I think you're right. I think they're getting back to what they were last year defensively. And we've heard now from Michael Parra, he told it to us on the show last week and also to Fox Sports 1 in the national broadcast last Sunday, that they've just kind of switched a few things that they're doing defensively, specifically in regard to crosses and how they want to defend crosses. And I'm trying to figure out what that is, but it certainly seems to be working, doesn't it?
It does. And I think sometimes it can just be as much about confidence as it is anything else. You know, sometimes one bad game can spill into another, and then things it can be momentum can work both ways. And they've got the momentum back on their side defensively right now. And I certainly look for Sporting KC to have a good one on Sunday afternoon. Again, all of the details for you. 3 o'clock, Sporting KC against Seattle Sounders. Children's Mercy Park will have the game for you. Myself and Carter right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB with the final whistle. Following the game, you can watch it on ESPN, and you can also buy your tickets. Come to the game, sportingkc.com and 888-4-KC-GOAL. First place, Sporting KC against Seattle Sounders on Sunday. That's going to do it for this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. We'll see you next week.